So, Sasha gave me her ideas, and I made some technical schematics, and now, aside from the lab, we have this communication and entertainment hub.
This is sick.
Over here, we have computer monitors set up, so if anything happens, we have a way to deal with it. As you can see, Sasha has already taken the central desk, like the boss she is. Next, we have a full-size smart television monitor, which is some of my best work, thank you very much. We can cast, we can watch, and we can do live streams. We have movie theater-level seats for our watch parties.
What he actually means is we have a place to suffer when we get to, you know, that Power Ranger season.
You mean Mega Force?
Don't you say it. We don't need that kind of negativity in here, Mr. Brian. Buddy, you have got to stop disappearing on us and just like, I don't know, let us know when you've got a project going on.
Sasha knew. And of course, I upgraded all of our communications equipment to interact with multiversal bandwidths to reach other dimensions and maybe make first contact.
Well, this looks amazing. I can't wait to prop up my feet and watch the hockey game on the big screen.
What's that beeping?
Sasha?
Working on it! It's a ringtone, apparently.
Please tell me that's just you testing the system and playing around with the ringtone machine.
That would be a big nope.
So that means...
We're getting a call!
Who would even have the number? You literally just set this up.
Unclear. It looks like the computer's trying to figure out the source of the transmission. But,
What? Is it the other Sasha?
No.
Someone from another dimension?
Let me see. So, it looks like the computer's trying to locate the planet and dimension we're being contacted from.
Will someone please turn that beeping off?
So you're saying we're receiving a distress beacon from another planet and another dimension. What are we? The Justice League?
More like the Suicide Squad.
Why can't we be the Teen Titans?
Pretty sure it's none of those. That's a beacon, and the USS VFTG is being hailed.
All right then, Ensign. Where is the transmission coming from?
That's Captain to you. The computer is reading out possible planets. Alderaan, wasn't that destroyed? Alpha Majoris 1, that's from Star Trek. Aresia, Alfheim? What the heck is going on?
The computer finally completed the analysis, and looks like the call's coming from Aquatar.
Hello, nerds, and welcome to Voices from the Grid on this fantastic Saturday morning, as is the life with cartoons and childhood TV shows. I am the fabulous Red Ranger Sasha Kaplan, and I'm joined today by three incredible, though somewhat frozen hosts, as it is very cold. And we're going to start with the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Ben Taylor, our Black Ranger still?
I am still the Black Ranger, and my clear conscience is just a sign of bad memory.
Oh, that's so sad. And speaking of bad memories, today we're joined by our green turned white ranger, Michael Lindenbaum.
I mean, I know I've...
Mike has become a national pastime on the show.
I've been hit one too many times in the head playing hockey, but I still have a lot of memory left in there somehow.
He didn't get the joke. That's okay.
I got it.
And of course, it is, we cannot finish our introductions without mentioning our Sentai champ, the expert on all of things Japanese costumed people fighting with giant robots, Mr. Brian Massey.
Hey, everybody. What's going on? Yeah, it's your boy, the Blue Ranger. And today I'm blue because I'm frozen. So that's all that ice that's around me.
Let it go, man.
Yeah. Just... Gotta warm up.
Well, y'all, I don't even know where to start with this episode, but
maybe tell people the title of the episodes that we're
No. Okay, fine. So this two-parter is Alien Rangers of Aquitar. And so we join our Rangers, but not as we know them. They have been transformed into somewhat adorable children. The jury's still out on that. And they're struggling to get back to the command center amid all of these shenanigans with Master Vile. And so most of this two-parter is doing two things: establishing the children version of these Rangers, and is also introducing the Alien Rangers of Aquitar, who are going to come and help the Rangers while we deal with all of these sort of time shenanigans, but are not time shenanigans, de-aging shenanigans. It's confusing, people.
It's shenanigans.
No. Shenanigans. So I think it's fair that we start with you and Mike and Brian, because you guys reviewed the episodes that were sort of in between the Master Vile introduction and this episode. So I'm curious.
You're asking me to remember something?
I know, shocking, isn't it? But what I'm asking you is, you guys both reviewed the two episodes in between Master Vile and Alien Rangers. Yeah. How has Master Vile changed for you? In what ways? And do you feel like his plans, like, because everything sort of carried over from the last episode, which was not a multi-parter.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on Master Vile's journey as a whole?
I mean, I don't think too much has changed. It's just he's I think the only real difference is that he's kind of utilizing everyone at his disposal, because it kind of took a team effort to get the Rangers in reverse and stuff like that, to kind of get them out of the way. Because that's why you see Zed and Rita, you know, standing as giant monsters above the city. Because, like, in a way, they're also taking credit for what essentially Master Vile did. So, to me, nothing really changed in that sense. It just became more of, like, a team effort, but two people trying to take full credit for it instead.
Yeah. I just think it's funny that in the midst of all this, he decided to throw a fan convention too, but just for a bunch of villains. Not too much. I still jokingly call it the Rock of Ages. Just because it's like, yeah, but I don't know. We don't get to spend enough time with him to see any kind of, like, if there was a major change, it's like, is that a major change, or is that just kind of part of what he already had planned? I don't know. So he's not around long enough for us to really get a beat on him like that, I feel. So
that's fair. Ben, what about you? What do you think of kind of the weight of Master Vile's journey from his introduction to this moment, which now he sort of made his big success, compared to what we saw in the previous multi-parter?
Well, there was no conga party, so did he really succeed? In all fairness, I've made no qualms about it, that in my opinion, over the course of Alien Rangers, kind of from pretty much changing of the Zords to the end of the season, the Rangers are not only on the back foot, but they lose, right? Ultimately, they lose. The power coins are destroyed. They lose.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I don't want to take credit away from Rita and Zed because of what happens earlier in the season, But ultimately, that is because of Master Vile. He's the one that at some point, I'm going to have to get to talk about it, rewinds time and all of that nonsense that just...
Yeah, so let's actually start with that whole thing. So Master Vile rewound time that has transformed everybody into children, but is not really a reversal of time. Can somebody explain it? Anyone?
It's a rock.
That's me open up my can of whoop ass on this.
Oh boy. Okay. Thank you.
Go for
thank
it.
You, Ben.
Right.
Deep breaths. We have a show. We still have a long time to go on the podcast. Go for it.
They need to make up their mind what happened, right? Because at 1 minute, all it did was de-age everyone 10 years. Everyone still had all their knowledge. They had everything they knew 10 years in the past, right? But like everything they had when the orb of whatever it's called goes off, but they're just 10 years younger. The next minute, everyone has time traveled back 10 years. The next minute, only some people have time traveled back 10 years. The next minute, and the worst part of it is the internal rules of their time travel are not consistent, right? Mm-hmm. There's a moment right at the beginning of the episode where Billy, young Billy, is like, well, we've traveled back in time, therefore our powers are broken. How does that work?
Yeah, I have a note about that.
Where does that come from?
Yeah.
And also, there's this whole thing, oh, you can't morph, because if you get hurt, the future can't happen without you. But you've gone specifically out of your way to say that the Rangers have just de-aged. They're not time-traveled. And if they were time-traveled, which everyone else is, then five of the six Rangers wouldn't be in Angel Grove.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cat would be in Australia. Rocky, Adam, and Aisha would be in Stone Canyon. And Tommy would be wherever he came from. It might be a better program that way. Except maybe Adam.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, there was a lot of moments where even I was going, that's not how this works, right? So you have the time travel element. They have
that is not how time travel works.
Right? And, like, with their powers, you could justify it in saying that their bodies are too young and tiny to handle the power needed for to be Power Rangers, right? That would be a better explanation. But we didn't get that. It was like, oh, we can't use our powers because we might get hurt. And then the future, whatever, will make sense. And I'm like, none of this makes any sense anyway.
Using the Power Ranger powers requires going through puberty, apparently.
I mean, it kind of makes sense when you think about it in the long term.
Because they did have to choose teenagers with attitudes. But then again, how does that explain Justin? But whatever.
Different powers adapt differently later on. Okay?
Yeah, okay. That's a very good turbo powers are different.
I mean, the White Ranger in the Sentai was a kid.
Yes, but this isn't a Sentai, Mike.
I know.
The other thing, right? And I know that we're going to talk about this again.
Okay.
But when time winds forward, it's not referred to as restoring the future or going back to the future, TM. It's recorded as time winding forward. Right? Everyone still remembers what happened. So there's no time travel involved.
Which is why Time Force didn't come to unleash a can of whoop ass.
Yeah. Jen Scott shows up, ends the problem, done. Right?
Yells at people. Don't forget the yelling at people.
But, like, As someone who is a big fan of time travel stories, this, I can't use the words I want to use because it would be a lot of work for Mike to bleep them.
Because this is a children's show.
It's just so bad.
It's really bad. Mike, Brian, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I do, actually. The point happens so very early on, and I'm just kind of adding on to what Ben said at this point, too, is, you know, it's established that they still have their memories, like the Rangers have their memories. And then, like, not even, like, 10 minutes into the episode, they bump into Bulkan's skull, and they have this thing where, like, they're like, who are you, dweebs? And it's like, oh, remember? They didn't meet us at this point. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, it contradicts itself so early on that, like, you know, it's easy, like, later on when there's all these other discrepancies about, like, how time travel works. It's just, like, my natural reaction was to just throw all that out the window and go, okay, this is, like, the loosest time travel BS I've ever seen in a show. Whatever. Fine.
I think at the end of the day, what they were trying to maybe do, and they just did not explain it at all, was that because the Rangers had the power coins was able to protect their memories on stuff, and that's probably just it.
Other than that, I have no because clue. There are people who aren't the Rangers who are just wound back.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a mess.
And then you get the Rangers and Bulkan Skull go on this Home Alone-like adventure. And 7, 8 children. I remind you that at this point, the senior Rangers, when they're in the future, haven't graduated from high school yet. So they're what? What age? Because they graduate like
16,
in what?
16, 17. Because they graduate in Turbo.
In Turbo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is like 2 years before Turbo. So they would be juniors at this point?
Sure, we'll go with that.
How old are juniors?
Power Rangers is weird.
Junior is about like 16, 17.
They might, so at this point, these children are 6.
Except that, like, I think they made them 10 years old.
Right, but logically, if you look at the thing, time has been wound back 10 years, and they're either juniors or sophomores, they are 6. And 8 of them managed to beat up the super-powered Tengas that could one-hit Power Rangers 5 episodes ago.
Actually, that's a really good point, because they sort of forgot that the Tengas got a power boost and that you need the glitter armor to, like, beat them back up. So the kids just sort of resort to these, like, okay, it was kind of funny watching kids beat up Tengas, not gonna lie, but
there was one excellent moment of comedy in that whole thing. There was a lot of slapstick, but there's one excellent moment of comedy where the one Tenga flies up to get to Aisha and Adam when they're on the fire escape, and Aisha gives him the plant, and he looks into the camera like, uh-oh, and does the Wile E. Coyote style fall. Just, chef's kiss. But that doesn't take away from the fact that these kids and beat up these Tengas that morphed teenagers couldn't kill.
Yeah.
The Tengas that made the ninja powers obsolete get beaten up by Kevin McAllister and his friends.
Look, clearly the power, the steroids that Mr. Vile gave them they ran out.
So. They were time limited.
They were time limited.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case where they just sent regular Tengas instead of the superpower because it's like they're kids.
But there's only a set number of Tengas.
Yeah.
Because they were birthed out of an egg. So there's only a set number of them. Yes, we discussed this in previous episodes.
There's a very simple explanation.
Yeah.
No.
The steroids were off.
And then, and sorry, I'm not quite done. Balkan Skull, as the kids, work with the Rangers to defeat the Tengas. And then again, later in this serial, they'll work with the Rangers again in the school bus to defeat Rito and Goldar.
And then doing Goldo.
when they fast forward into the future, they don't remember any of that. The Rangers barely remember it.
Time travel's a hell of a drug.
They got other stuff to worry about, I guess.
So actually, now that we've gotten on the topic, so let's talk about the fact that they've done something here that Power Rangers really shouldn't do long term, which is use child actors long term. But let's talk about our thoughts on the child actors. Do you think they imbue the characters they're portraying and kind of mimicking the actions of the actors? Do they think they're just awful? Like, what are your thoughts? We'll start with Mike this time.
I mean, besides the fact that I think the kid who was the red, who was Rocky, beat up Blake Foster in real life in MMA. I don't know. I mean, they were like, I think they had a little direction from the actual people that they were, you know, mimicking, because like they were still like, all the actors were still on set. So they probably had, you know, some interaction and go, hey, you know, this is how, you know, like Jason and Frank was probably telling the kid, you know, this is how I would, you know, do things. This, like, some of the mannerisms, like,
yeah,
they definitely did have some of that. But I don't know. They're the fill a plot point. To do the story where we'll get to it later, but you know, where Alien Rangers kind of kick them into a portal and go have fun, kids.
I honestly think in some instances the child actors, they might be a little better than the actual adult actors, and I say that with Rocky and Cat.
Namely, it's not that hard to be better.
I'm joking, but like. I'm joking. But in all fairness, though, I think the MVP out of these kid actors was Billy, because I absolutely believe that was Billy as a kid. Not Billy the kid, but Billy as a kid. Everybody else, they did an okay job, but I mean, they're working with kid actors. They were fine. I don't know. And
so I usually have extensive pages of notes for these episodes. I have one note written down for the Equation Rangers, and it is Rocky's child actor kind of looks like Mike.
Oh my god.
I can confirm it was not me.
Did you have a mullet growing up, kid? As a kid,
he's got a mullet now.
It's not a mullet; it's a fro.
I did kind of have a mullet as a kid at that age, because that was
wow,
like
90s in America was a dark time.
I mean, full disclosure: emulating Peter Bondra, who was my favorite hockey player growing up, he had a mullet.
Of course, there's a freaking hockey connection.
Of course, there's always a hockey connection.
So from my perspective, I definitely think that some of the child actors were better than others. I felt really bad for the little girl playing Kat, because she looks like she's trying, but they're also trying to have her do an Australian accent, which is something she cannot do.
I do want to give the company credit, right? They had the forethought to realize they were going to do a thing of winding the Rangers back in time towards the end of the season. So when they showed Kat as a kid earlier in the season, they used the same actress.
Yep.
That was a really nice little thing that I don't think Mighty Morphin season one or two would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And actually, yeah, all the kids that were used before, when they were turning the kids for that one single episode, yeah, it's all the same kid actors.
Yeah. It's a really nice, a really nice, like, touch, I think is the best way of putting it.
Especially when continuity has never been Power Rangers' strong suit.
Yeah.
Hunty Wooda Hooda.
Also, not, like Mike said, there's a standout in the actors. There's two of them, in my opinion. There's the young gentleman that played Billy. I think his name was Justin. And I'm gonna sound biased because it's me, but Matthew Sakimoto, who plays young Adam,
yeah, he was good.
He was that's how I imagined Adam as a kid, right?
Yeah,
just this kind of withdrawn, but when he says something, it's kind of important kind of kid, right?
I also
gotta give it the young lady playing Aisha did her best, but she wasn't given the best dialogue to work with.
No.
Yeah, so I think
I'm not sure who told the young lady playing Kat that she should be an actress, but they were wrong. Because she, I can't believe I'm about to say these words. She's worse. She's worse than Catherine Sutherland. And that's hard.
Yeah.
I would say part of, like I said, part of the issue I think with her is they didn't really help her with the accent. They're like, just do something. And she just, like kids need direction and they need solid help. And it just wasn't there for her. So I feel like maybe if she'd gotten a little bit more help, it could have been better.
She also suffered from Luke syndrome. But I wanted to go to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters. But Zordon! Like, that was like every other line that Kid Kat said.
Yeah.
I will say this real quick, though. The kids that they got for Bulk and Skull were awesome, though.
They were great. And the kid that played Rocky, who's, I just looked it up, whose name is actually Michael.
Everybody put on your hats. This is real.
It's not me, I swear.
It's real to me.
He had a couple of really nice moments. When I think it was, there's a moment, is that the thing with Bulk and Skull? No, it's when Aisha's, they're in the police station and Aisha's like, why are they treating us like we're kids? And he just looks at her and goes, hey, to break it to you, but we are kids. Like, that was a really nice moment. But, like, these kids actors are not the best.
No.
Okay, but, like, are they not the best by, like, normal standards or by Power Ranger standards? Because I feel
they
like...
They make Dex look like a good actor.
Ooh. Okay, that's... It's way too early for Overdrive hate, but...
No. Dex as in... From the beginning of this season.
Oh, you mean Masked Rider Dex. Masked Rider, ugh.
I forgot that existed.
And the person in Overdrive is Dax, thank you.
Dax, same thing. it literally sounds exactly the same, so whatever. So let's see here. I have so many questions. Let's talk about the Monster Conference. Uniting is one, and all of the villains, and Mike sort of touched upon this, uniting is one to destroy Angel Grove. Let's talk about their plan to destroy the Morphin Grid. And I'm gonna ask this because it sounds we talked a little bit in previous episodes we recorded how we're at a period of this season where a lot of things are sort of intentionally and unintentionally being set up that's going to carry us over into future seasons, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing in other villains to show that there's a lot of people that want to rule the galaxy. Apparently, it's a very crowded convention. But here we also have this, like, talk about a monster conference. To me, the first thing that came to mind was the United Alliance of Evil, and it sort of feels like I kind of want to know, just, is Master Vile working for Dirk Spectre, or was he, like, supposed, like
Meanwhile,
I don't know.
Vile at the Legion of Doom, but, sorry, we had to get that one little pop in, but.
So I guess, what do you guys think about the ways that these last few episodes, and, like, we'll talk more about this when we get to the finale, of, like, how things are sort of being set up for the future? What do we think about the plan to destroy the Morphing Grid? Brian, we'll start with you this time.
Okay, sure. I think it's a cool little setup, and obviously later on they revisit it for In Space, which is really cool. And I think it's a fun way also behind the scenes, if there were suits that might have been shipped over from Japan that might not have been used too extensively in the show, you know, or were just used one off, but they had some favorites. It's like, hey, here's a way to reuse those for, like, you know, a fun scene, which I think is really cool. I can't help but hear, by the way, like, about a monster, like, conference or convention, and just wonder, okay, did they get their badge at the door, or did they have to go sign in? You know,
they had to check their weapons at the door, though.
Yeah. What did the t-shirt look like? And if so, do they still have one?
I came to take over the world, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
Yeah. So, I think it's, I thought it was really cool, just seeing, like, a bunch of villains together like that. And I mean, like, by this point, though, you know, Lord Zedd's throne room already seems pretty crowded with the addition of, like, Rito and Master Vile. But this was just, like, you know, this looked like the floor of Comic-Con on, like, a Saturday, kind of, sort of, if, like, you looked at the right places. It was just crowded, and, like, there was no, like, Finster even gets run over at one point. He gets
and that's criminal right there. You should never have that happen to Finster, yeah. Ever.
And I felt so bad for him. Yeah, I thought it was a really cool point, and I do think it sets up, like, what happens later on pretty well, even if it's not entirely, like, implicit that's going to happen. It shows, hey, there's a lot more to the universe than just Lord Zedd and Master Vile. So, yeah, I liked it.
Mike?
Monster Conference 1995. I want to rule Angel Grove. No, it's that's another shirt design for you there, Brian. But
I thought you were gonna start off this all like, hello, my name is Michael, and I want to rule the world, and everybody goes, hi, Mike.
That's an AA meeting, not a conference.
I mean, what's the difference, really?
At this point, probably. But you know, in regards to destroying the Morphing Grid.
Right.
I think this is the first real attempt at wanting to destroy it, because I think that the focus has always been, like, you know, we need to destroy the Rangers. Well, yeah. Why did it finally take three seasons to go, you know, maybe we should go after the Morphing Grid instead? So it's kind of smart. It actually leads into what we see in the episodes to follow. With Rito and Goldar.
Oh my god. Ugh.
So as for your one question here, this is, there's a chance Vile was sort of on the same level, on the level of Dark Spectre. Don't really know. Cause, like, Vile's only here for, like,
a minute.
A handful of episodes. So it's kind of hard to tell with such a small impact.
That's fair.
Which is funny because, you know, like, he shows up unannounced to his daughters, and it's kind of the equivalent of him, like, showing up unannounced, crashing on the couch, and then going, all right, I got to get back to work, honey. Love you. Bye. You know, he just dips, which we'll talk about later. But
Yeah, I agree with Mike. It's like, it's funny how like it took three seasons, because I didn't touch on that because it's early. Sorry. I didn't touch on the Morphin Grid thing. But yeah, I do think it's funny that they, like Mike said, that they take three seasons to do it. But I think at this point, they finally have an opportunity to go in there because it's a little more vulnerable. So now that the chance is there, I mean, it's a perfect opportunity. I just think, don't put Rito and Goldar on that.
Yeah, they're not exactly known for their competence.
Yeah, like, and I hate to say it, at this point, they're kind of as trustworthy as, like, Babu and Squat. So don't do that. You know?
Ben, what about you?
So, to start with the whole Evil League of Evil. No, wait, that's a different thing. The United Alliance of Evil. Now I just want to see Bad Horse and Countdown to Destruction.
That'd be amazing.
The Thoroughbred of Sin. To start with that, we as people from the future know that Master Vile was supposed to show up in Countdown to Destruction, but didn't, alongside a couple of other monsters, Rito being the most notable one, because the suits got destroyed, and rather than just make new suits for like a one-off episode, they decided to not sort of have them there.
Right.
So, but in the universe, I kind of, we'll talk about this a bit later when we get to Master Vile's ending, but I don't necessarily think he was a member of this universe spanning conglomerate, as it were. Because they talk about him being the conqueror of the M51 galaxy. And if he had been part of this marauding band of skullduggery, he would have been trying for more than that, right? He would have been trying to get the next the M50 galaxy, and then the M49 galaxy, and then...
Wait, he's going to leave the M52 galaxy alone?
Well, no, he's got to go one way before he can go the other, right? You don't want a war on two fronts.
Very
just,
solid.
Just advice. Just see what happened in World War II.
It was a war on three fronts.
Yeah. As for his plan to destroy the Morphin Grid, it was awful. It was the worst. He just rocked up outside the command center and put down a bomb. Like, I know we'll talk about bombs and timers and fuses and things when we get to Turbo, but because Diva talks, man, just shortening fuses. It did make for a great moment of comedy when somehow Alpha is sweating. And to wipe his eyes, he uses a windscreen wiper, which was pretty funny. But I don't know. Just, we also have the convenience of foresight, because we know the Morphin Grid isn't in the command center, right? It's more of this amorphous planet-wide thing or universe-wide thing. It's like the Force, right? It just it permeates everything. And with what they're doing, Dino Fury, it might be something completely different. But anyway, blowing up the command center won't blow up the Morphin Grid. But they don't know that. But yet they should, because there are rangers elsewhere. Because, like, how has Master Vile not heard of Andros? right?
Maybe the M51 galaxy is on the different side of the is in a different spot than KO-35, okay? But you do bring up a good point here, Ben, that the entire plan is just sort of there.
Yeah, it's just an excuse to have a bomb outside the command center. And it is a good piece of foreshadowing. So why we would know that the device that Rito and Goldar then try to take later is a threat, right? But I don't know.
Speaking of bomb defusal, let's talk about... No,
why did Alpha just cut that cord? Just cut that cord.
I'm sitting here literally having watched like all of the different cop shows and like SWAT shows and whatnot. And I'm like, why don't you just pour water on the fuse and be done with it? Like really? They like, I understand they needed to hype up the quote unquote drama, but like even the kids are like, if that's the thing leading there to go boom, why don't you just cut the cord? Like there's so many things you could have done. But one of the, we talked a little bit about some of the great comedic moments in the episode, but there is one moment that to me personifies when this was made. And that is the moment at the police station.
Yeah.
Oh man.
For those that haven't seen the episode, let's preface that. So after the whole thing with the Tangas, the kids are trying to get to the command center, but then the police arrive and Bulk and Skull end up grabbing the police and they're like, look, help us, we're children. And everybody except Tommy and Kat are like, oh, we're gonna have to take you to the police station and call your parents. And so then we sort of flash forward and Mrs. Skolovich and Mrs. Bulkmeyer have already come and taken their children home. And the rest of the kids are still stuck in the police station. So, and you have a very, very blind front desk sergeant. And so the children have to dress up as Kat and Tommy do the whole stand on somebody else's shoulder in a trench coat thing. And I'm like, this works in cartoons. And I've seen like 90s comedies do this, but this is just the personification of how this doesn't work. And it shouldn't work.
It is the personification of just how bad Angel Grove's police force is.
Yeah.
It's almost as if like, I was telling this to Brian a while back. It's almost as bad as the police force in Batman 66.
Yeah. Almost the exact same level of incompetence, really.
We have an issue here. Well, Power Rangers will take care of it. We'll
call Batman on the bat phone.
Yeah.
But there's also the fact that like they're in a crowded police station, right? And there's one blind desk sergeant and nobody, and other cops are around, right? There's other officers in the background and nobody looks over and is like, that's a child. That is very clearly a child in a trench coat. Come on.
They could either have more things going on or they could literally look at that and go, yeah, no, this is above my pay grade. But
cops are lazy in Angel Grove.
I had the thought too, because this is right around the same time too. The person who wrote this bit might have gone to go see Little Rascals and was like, let's do that.
I thought Little Rascals came out like in the early 90s.
Didn't that movie come out in 95?
I could be wrong. 95? I don't know. Don't think I've ever seen it.
Okay.
But while Mike looks it up, because he's our resident Googler.
94.
It's such a, like, to me, this was like, this is why I stopped watching Mighty Morphin kind of a moment. Where it's just like, this is too ridiculous for my somewhat older brain.
Little Rascals was 1994, and this season was 96.
So it's been a hot minute.
Okay. The thing that, like, it's really silly, and like, my jaw dropped when I was watching this, because I forgot, and I was like, because they you know, beforehand, like, Kat calls the police station and she's like, all right, well, come pick them up, pretending to be their mom. And I'm like, they're not gonna do what I think they're gonna do, are they? And like,
I saw that coming a mile away.
I was like, please, like I was praying. I was like, please don't do the two kids in a trench coat thing. And like they show up and I'm like, they're doing the two kids in a trench coat thing. Okay, cool. All right, this is where we're at now. Oh my God. One little thing, and it doesn't really affect it or whatever, but like Kat's actress like cannot stop giggling.
Just because she probably can't stand sit still on whatever thing they have her under.
Yeah.
Because it's not like she's actually standing on the other kid's shoulder. It's just like a gimmick, but.
Yeah.
So moving on to this, the Rangers finally make it to the command center, unless you have something else you want to add, Ben.
No, not. Is it tradition for when kids get lost to give them police officer's hat and ice cream?
I mean, they're probably traumatized. You want them to feel safe.
Right.
They were attacked by monsters. What did you want them to do? Give them, like, blankets and a brandy? Like
A blanket would probably be more effective.
Here, wear this hat. It'll keep you warm, kid.
They ran out of the junior policeman badges, okay? This is all they had to go with.
Yeah. I would really have liked it if we'd have seen Bulk and Skull there. Because then when they go back to the future... Also, I would have loved to have seen a younger Lieutenant Stone.
Yeah.
Like 10 years in the past, Lieutenant Stone.
I think we did, though. But the thing is that I think when we did see the younger Lieutenant Stone, he wasn't in the police or anything like that.
But that's what I'm saying. I would have liked to see him
a little more.
Well, in the police station.
Yeah.
So, Ben, yeah, would you have had him still as a cop and still given orders and stuff?
Yeah.
But he's just pint-sized.
He would have been like the like file clerk or the guy that they stuck in the back in the evidence room that nobody wants to talk to.
You would see him like first couple of days on the job or whatever. And
he'd be a trainee.
And you'd see him in Bulk and Skull's place.
Oh wow, I would have loved that.
I would have liked that. Yeah, that would have been cool.
And then you could have seen like when we could have got some kind of indication as to was Lieutenant Stone always this awful at his job?
Or is
this just a thing that he's given up of once he's got promoted? Right? Like, but that's again, that's just me being like, oh, they should have done this and not that. But
No. So then let's talk about what they did do. So the Rangers finally reached the command center. they get sort of teleported in after Alpha's like, oh, look, I can just teleport them in now.
This would be after Alpha discovers that the power drain in the command center is because he had a vacuum plugged in.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about the vacuum.
I mean, hey, you got to keep the command center clean. I mean,
there's nobody ever in there. It's not like the Rangers sleep in there overnight. You have a glowing head in a tube, and then you have a little robot. That's it. Nobody lives in the command center, quote unquote, except the little robot. But okay, so we've already talked about how the stupidity of the Rangers not being able to morph, or the stupid explanation, I should say, as to why the Rangers cannot morph. So the answer that we're given is more Rangers. And so we are told that the only option for some reason is the Equation Rangers, despite the fact that they're reliant entirely on like being underwater. Thoughts on this before we get to the introduction of the Equation Rangers as a whole?
I mean, why not just recruit more humans and give them the power coins?
Yeah.
That's too logical, Ben.
I'm just saying.
Ben.
What about their parents? Hey, if their ancestors can be Rangers, so can their parents.
You can open a hole in time and space, right? So why not just go back in time and get the Wild West Rangers, who have already morphed and know how to use the powers, and bring them into the future?
Because Time Force.
Which would bring even more Rangers.
Yeah, you'd think they could have at least like sent like a distress beacon to what's that planet? Get the Masked, not that I want to see that actor again, but like the Masked Rider even would have been
helpful. He's already on Earth at this point.
Yeah. And he's off on his own adventures, apparently.
I see.
Which is funny because apparently that doesn't affect his area at all because there's a whatever.
Oh, his show would be canceled by then.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So
anyways,
it's weird. And it's, I was like, well, why these specific, also, does anybody know like sort of the behind the scenes, what was going on with this? Because I find it weird that their only option is these weirdly designed underwater Rangers.
I guess they just wanted to try to make them alien-like. I mean, I could reach out to one person.
When you say behind the scenes, do you mean if there's a reason why they rewound everything, or
I mean both, because like I understand them wanting to use the other Ranger suits from the Sentai, right? Mm. And this is the concept they came up with, but like, well, then like, why de-age the kids and have this like weird mini arc of 10 episodes, and then afterwards introduce these really bizarrely, like, it's a weird option for these alien Rangers, because not only is there a lot of makeup involved, prosthetics involved, you also have to do that stupid thing with their voices, which is incredibly irritating.
I think I might be in the minority. I don't mind the effect on the voice.
Yeah, I don't mind what they did, because they had to make them obviously look like they came from another planet and not kind of softball it like the way they did with A Friend in Need with Dex.
Or in space.
Where they just kind of put a crystal on his head and go, yeah, that's enough to be a different.
No, that's fair. That makes sense. Yeah.
And then like the voice thing didn't bother me either, because it makes it sound like a little bit more foreign, more alien a little bit.
See, I get all of that, but as someone with musical training, it is incredibly grating on my ears. So like, I understand wanting them to sound a little different. I understand wanting them to look different, but it's just like, I can't with the voice, but it would have been, I don't know. Did anybody look up on like the IMDb or the Ranger Wiki why this whole concept started even?
Well, I've looked into it in the past when we've done other episodes, and there's no specific reason for it. Like, it's not like, oh, we wanted to give the actors some time off before Zio or any of that. It's literally just
the Ranger suits.
This is what we did.
Yeah.
I do need to say, I think the people playing the Equestrian Rangers deserve some props for actually acting like aliens.
Yeah.
Like, they have different mannerisms and the way they move, and
they do the weird hand thing.
Yeah, it's not even just that, but like just they don't move fluidly. They move in a staccato motion, which would make sense because they're used to moving with the resistance of water.
Yeah.
When they don't have that, they just give that. It's kind of like
the aliens from Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they, you know, they from Galaxy Quest took something from this from a little bit, because but I think this was
the point I was trying to make is far too often you get, oh, this is an alien and they just act human, right?
Yeah.
These people were actually alien and they looked alien and they sounded alien. And that I think is very an underrated and not often mentioned.
Yeah. Pardon the turn of phrase, but they literally acted like fish out of water.
Yeah.
It was
the slightly creepy moment of them touching the kids when they first showed up, but
yeah, that was a little weird.
But I think that was the point of that.
Yeah.
That could be written off as, oh, this is what a human looks like. Mm-hmm. So
Well, yeah, it's easier than just like doing what, just like poking a person. So then, like, I guess that's sort of the obvious lead into the next question is like, what do we think of the Equestrian Rangers as a whole? Which I think Ben answered, but Mike, Brian, if you want to add anything to it, because like, I'm not.
I'm only going to talk in the context of this episode.
And yeah, obviously in the context of this episode.
Too early to tell. Okay. Because, like, obviously, like, Brian and I have reviewed a lot of the Alien Ranger stuff because of the Zeo Crystal quests and stuff. So we see more of them. But from this initial introduction, it does a lot what Ben said. It gives you people who look, sound, and act very alien. So it's like a massive contrast to what we've been seeing the previous like 2.5 seasons at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but at the same time, we get to see them fight. I actually kind of like their morph sequence a little bit too. It's about time we got a very different morph sequence on the show.
Yeah.
And it was just like first impression kind of cool, but at the same time, too early to tell what you're going to get out of them moving forward. And we do get a lot of shenanigans with them moving forward too.
Yeah.
Like that car wash.
Yeah. Oh my God. The car wash, and the ice cream. I would agree with you on that. And you know what? I would argue that is okay. That's not a bad thing, because you know, less is more, especially when like, hey, we've got more episodes to go. So you get an idea of who they are in a sense, but you don't know what their personalities entirely are. You know, this is like, you know, you got to get to know them. And so if you just info dumped everything about them in the first two episodes, then that wouldn't be interesting. So like, you get to learn more about them over the course of the next 8 episodes. So I think, like Mike said, yeah, it's too early to tell in the context of these episodes. But for what we see, I liked it. And I liked their suits. I liked how they fought. And while I did like that, their morph sequence is funny, it's fine, but I do think it's kind of funny that they like go into a little aquarium to morph, kind of sort of like they're in like a little like water tube. Kind of saw the point that like, oh yeah, they're water-based. And yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Ben?
Outside of what I've already mentioned, I think I might have acclimatized. I think I might have enjoyed this first appearance of these ranges a bit more than everyone else. Like, there was a lot about them that I really enjoyed, and there was a couple of things that I didn't enjoy. First of all, I love that their teleport is a water molecule. The hydrogen molecule bound to two oxygen molecules. I thought that was really clever. I absolutely love the way they control their Zords. The fact that they're fighting, they're doing the moves on the ground, and then the battle Borgs, I think they're called, are doing those same moves in combat. That was really striking to me. I'm not the biggest fan of the Kaku Ranger outfits. But I don't know, it suggests a bit more ninjery things than you actually get out of the Equestrian Rangers at any point. Also, I absolutely detest the fact, while I love the fact that they introduced Delphine as the leader of the Equestrian Rangers, good job, gender equality, women in leading powers, whatever. But because they are confining to the Sentai footage, the Red Ranger is the one that does everything. He even calls for the morph. He calls for Zords. Like, he's the one that does everything.
So why not just make Delphine the Red Ranger and...
Wait, did Delphine say it's morphin' time, though?
Yeah, Delphine...
In the first time, but yeah.
But, like, there's times where, like, they're doing... When was it? She says it's morphing time. And then after they morph, he's giving all of the orders.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
He completely controls everything. And but again, because they are the focus of the Sentai, he is the focus of the Sentai. He gets hashtag all the starring moments. In every episode, he is the star. He's the Tommy.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think in any of the episodes the Red Ranger says it's morphin' time.
Well, you got to give Delphine something to do because she's the leader.
Because I think the only people who actually say it's morphin' time is the Black Ranger, the Blue Ranger, and Delphine. I think they're the only three who actually say it's morphin' time. Yeah. The Yellow and the Red Ranger, I don't think, ever say it.
And, like, it just make if that's going to be the case, just make Delphine the Red Ranger.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Make her the leader. Like, if you're going to say she's the leader, make her the leader.
Otherwise, you're just trying to pat yourself on the back, like, look, we made a girl be a leader for 2 seconds. Fine!
I can see that they're like... Well, if they want to do the... Well, if there's a White Ranger, they're the leader, right? Do you know what I mean? Because Tommy's white and he's the leader.
Here's why it would be really confusing.
Huh?
Here's why that wouldn't work. It's because the White Ranger outfit has a skirt on it.
So? Then put two female Rangers in there.
Right? You're allowed to have more than one girl on a Power Ranger team, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm not saying...
As has been proven with Dino Fury... Girl Rangers don't need no skirts.
Nope.
Yeah, but that's
guys, but like this is the 90s. You have to tell there has to be a skirt so we know that's the Girl Ranger.
Yeah.
So just
if there's not a skirt, I'm going Rangers.
Make like, two you, female Equation Rangers and have Delphine look good in a pantsuit.
And honestly,
forward 90s.
If you ignore MMPR, we don't see a female ranger without a skirt and truly until like Time Force.
So?
Yes, or Lost Scouts. Trainee didn't wear a skirt.
I'm talking not MMPR.
So?
So.
Wait, what about
then you Lost Galaxy?
Yeah.
Sure. Galaxy had skirts. I don't remember.
Yellow Ranger did not have a skirt.
Pink Ranger didn't either.
That's pretty.
Pink Ranger did actually. Oh no, you're right. They didn't. They didn't have neither. Nobody had skirts in Lost Galaxy.
Did they have skirts in Lightspeed Rescue?
I think just the Pink Ranger did.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, point being.
The point being, you could easily have made if you're going to say Delphine is the leader. Make her the leader.
Yeah.
Yep.
Don't have her be the person that calls for the morph and then have a dude do all the stuff.
Equality. It's cool that she's, you know, the leader, but what would have had more impact would be, before even like Samurai is, hey, here's our first female Red. That would be huge, especially in the 90s. Oh my God.
I mean, it would still be huge right now, but it still hasn't really happened. And I don't count Samurai for several reasons that we can get into afterwards. But
yeah,
pity she was the best thing about that season. Anyway.
The point being to all of this that, like, yeah, it's great idea, poor execution. But before we sort of, I open it up the floor to you guys for anything else, there's one moment I want to mention. And I think it's at the beginning of the first part. And I just really loved it. I thought it was so funny, which is when Master Vile is celebrating his success in the moon base in the castle. And Zed is just like in his chair going like, I'm so depressed. I cannot believe this is happening. And Rita's just like patting him on the head going, there, honey.
I know the exact moment you're talking about.
In charge.
Because Rito's just been like, dad's in charge. Sit down. And then he's like, aw.
It's okay, baby. It was just so funny. And I think it's almost a little bit sad. Like you feel a little bad for Zed. Because like here's his dad, his father-in-law that just sort of came in and manages to do all of this stuff and says, like, I've been here for a year and a half and I haven't managed to do anything except steal the Falcon Zord and Ninja, and then everything got ruined.
Oh my God. He is a depressed millennial. yeah.
But yeah, and, so now those are kind of all the questions that I had.
And there's actually something I wanted to throw in there super quick.
There is one other question, but you guys can go before we get there.
Yeah, but like I want to go back to Delphine real quick. It's like, you know, it's kind of interesting because like I was just thinking about this part. You know, Delphine calls the morph, but then the guy does like essentially all the command calling all the shots. And it's weird because it's like, in a way, it's like a step backwards, given how we've seen in like the first 2.5 seasons, Kim has called for the morph and has actually led the team in battle. Trini has done the morph and has led the team in battle at times. Aisha has called the morph, but did horrible leading battle, you know, but yeah. Like Kim, it had done it so many times. When it was like a Kim arc.
I mean, everybody's done it at one point because that's what usually happens in the character, like character development episodes, whereas like that ranger gets the focus. Yeah. I think you're giving way too much validity to the morphing call concept.
But the thing I'm saying is that like we've literally seen Kim call the morph and then call the shots.
Yeah.
That's a one-off character development episode,
but she's done it multiple times though.
For that moment, but it doesn't mean anything in the long term.
But Kim has done it multiple times though
in character.
Kim is also not here right now.
But the point I was trying to make is that having Delphine do the morph and then not call any shots, it's like a step backwards compared to what they have done in the past. That's the point of what I'm saying.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, I don't really see a difference.
What's kind of frustrating about this too, though, is the fact that like they're using a lot of American footage too, because like they had the Red Ranger, I think his name was Sasuke in Cocker Ranger, as like, you know, the figurehead, but in Cocker Ranger, you know, I think her name was Surhime, she was the leader. So, but because you're trying to sell toys to boys, Red's got to be the leader, or at least in the front. But you know, they're using, for a lot of these fights, they're using American footage of them on the ground controlling the battle borgs. So they could have easily swapped the two and put Delphine in front, because they're not beholden in that instance to Cocker Ranger footage. They're filming American footage. If Delphine's the leader and you want to put that impression out there, put White in front then. You could do
too much effort.
You stand here. There. That's all the effort that we needed.
It's still too much effort for Power Rangers. So there is one part of this to sort of move on from this conversation that we forgot to talk about, and that is sort of Master Vile's exit.
Peace.
Yeah, deuces. Pretty much.
Like, what
he's
do you want?
Off again.
Like, there, I've just gone into depth about just how, like, yeah, that's all he did. It's like,
Rita, my job is done. Deuces.
But you didn't do anything. Bye. obviously
Ben has thoughts. I see that look on Ben's face. He has thoughts.
Okay, controversial opinion here. Master Vile is the smartest big bad that any Ranger team ever faces.
Ever?
Ever.
Convince me.
Because he gets his butt whooped 5 times and is like, nah, I'm good. I'm out. I'm not going to do this forever. I'm not going to be the definition of insanity of trying the same thing over and over again and getting the same result. I'm going to go back to the M51 galaxy. I'm going to retire. I'm going to open a coffee shop where you can play board games. I'm going to host a weekly Magic the Gathering tournament. Like, he disappears and you never see him again. Ever. Ever. He's the smartest bag bat they've ever had, because he's the only one that never dies. Like, well, he's not the only one that ever dies, but like, he's the only one that's never really...
Z-Wave reached the M51 galaxy.
But at that point, right, by the same rationale, with like, Rita and Zed, they got turned good rather than destroyed, right? So the same thing could have happened with Master Vile, given the family lineage, right? So
sure.
It's entirely possible that, like, Master Vile just goes back to the M51 galaxy. He's like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm just gonna rule and stay here and do stuff and play Nintendo." And
he pulls a Thanos.
Yeah, he just retires to a farm.
Like, yeah, you know, but the like difference I said, Thanos succeeded and retired, and Master Vile's like, "Yeah, I tried. It didn't work out."
But the point being, he at least realizes he can't win, right? So he's just like, "No, I've got other things to do." Goes home, opens his coffee shop, runs his Magic the Gathering tournaments, and like,
he does like to party, so he's gonna open up a juice bar and just like,
yeah, he's gonna franchise Ernie's. He's gonna franchise Ernie's, right?
Sure. Master Vile's villainous vicars.
He's going to have Conga Fridays.
But do we think, was Master Vile's sort of quote unquote last stand climactic, or was it just kind of like,
I think they kind of wrote themselves into a corner, right? Because by this point, they knew what was happening in Zeo, right? They knew the Machine Empire was going to have to show up because of the Zeo footage. So they needed a way to not only get Master Vile out of the way, but they needed a way to get Zed and Rita out of the way. Right? And they knew that they didn't have a way to just... They didn't want to just flat out destroy them, right? So what they did is they had Master Vile go home, and then, as we know at the beginning of Zeo, Rita's like, "Can we come hang on your planet while the Machine Empire are here?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure. If you want." But the point being, like, they'd introduced so many kind of villains at this point, they had to get rid of them all somehow. And we talked about in Master Vile and Metallic Armor how Master Vile's just better at this than the others, right? So it makes sense that he's the one that goes, "No, I think at this point a tactical withdrawal is the fitting
move,
is the fitting play, right? This is the tactic."
Sometimes you just got to know that you're losing the battle and you ain't gonna win it.
Yeah, like, I don't know, I think Master Vile did exactly what he needed to do, which he was brought in to position the Rangers for their ultimate defeat, right? And if they hadn't removed him at this point, they never would have been able to remove him. Because I think it's the next episode where the power coins get destroyed, or the episode after. But if he's still there when that happens, he's never going to leave. And you're just going to have a bigger mess at the beginning of Zeo, right? So I think it was exactly what it needed to be.
Fair. I see no arguments here.
Yeah. That makes sense.
In that case, that's all. I think that's all there is to say on this episode, unless anybody wants to chime in and add anything that I might have missed. I think we covered everything.
There was a nice little bit of, again, unintentional foreshadowing, where Alpha talks about Alpha 6, who we will see in Turbo. The jive-talking, New York-accented Alpha. What else?
I kind of like the scene where Aisha, like, they're getting ready to go out and call out the monsters, and Aisha's like, "We love you," and like Alpha sends him off and says, "I love you too," and like he pulls a Mr. Feeny at the end of Boy Meets World. Mm-hmm. That was kind of touching.
Technically, Mr. Feeny pulled an Alpha.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that was a nice bit. Although the implications of Alpha 6 in retrospect are a little terrifying, so
Well, I mean, we then see Alpha 4 in pieces in a box later.
Yeah.
It's I don't know.
It
goes along with the theme that we've discovered of unintentional foreshadowing. Which is why I brought it up.
Do you think that, like, obviously there's different personalities, but do you think that, like, alphas are kind of like iPhones or Androids where you can, like, you know, transfer your save data? Or I don't know.
No, I'm gonna say no, because, or at least no to a degree, because Alpha is like, no two alphas are the same.
Right.
And even like the only difference I think is like Alpha 6, because unless there's an Alpha 7, I don't remember, the Jive talking Alpha eventually gets his voice module changed a little bit in space. Mm-hmm. And so you have sort of like an Alpha with a different personality. So it's both.
The thing with downloading from one to the other would be the implication that that leaves the previous Alpha obsolete. But we know that that's not the case, because Alpha and Zordon go off when Alpha 6 comes in. So,
right,
like Alpha 5 is still out there doing things.
Alpha 5 is alive.
And then he goes off to become Invader Zim.
True. So, yeah.
And I guess on that note, I think we should start with Mr. Ben Taylor on where the people can find you on the social medias. Look, Mike's already getting ready.
You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And you can find the sister show, The Voices from the Grid. Awesome Mania, which is a wrestling podcast that Mike and I do, where we sit down with one of our friends every month and we watch some form of pay-per-view, usually from the 90s. We are currently working our way through 1997, I believe, at the time of recording. You can find that at
txhthockey.com/x25productions/awesomemania.
And you can find this show, Voices from the Grid, on Twitter at
VFTG_PR.
Yep.
All right, Brian, how about you?
All right. You can find me on TikTok at BlueRanger_BRI. You can also find me on Twitter at OneDrunkGeek. You can also find me with a bunch of my other friends of the show on CastWaveStudios.com. Where I do a show named after my Twitter handle, or no, it's the Twitter handle named after the show, One Drunk Geek, where I talk about beer and nerdy stuff.
And Michael, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75, and of course everything's on the website, txhthockey.com, and for this show specific, /VFTG.
And of course, you can find my lovely self crying in a corner at geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Always happy to answer your questions. And over on Twitter at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. So with that, Mr. Ben Taylor, would you take us out?
We have started to discuss the end of season 3 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. It has been a long time coming. A long, long time coming. But soon we will be done with MMPR. And we will leave it as we leave you, as we always do, by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. The words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until our next more phenomenal episode, be sure to grab your power coins and your power morphers.
And may the power protect you.
Yes, the dolphin voices are annoying.